Now today we heard about the Israelites as they made their way first from Egypt and then through the wilderness and came to the land of Canaan, the promised land. And there, as we heard today, the Lord told Moses to send men, spies, into the land to see what the land is like and what the people were like who lived in the land. And so these men went in, there were 12 of them, one from each of the tribes of Israel. And they were in the land for 40 days, we were told, a long time. And when they returned, they brought news. They brought some very good news. They said that it was a very fruitful land. And they even brought proof of that. They brought the fruits of the land. One of the things they brought was a cluster of grapes. But it was no ordinary cluster of grapes. Now, usually a cluster of grapes you can hold in your hands like this. But this cluster of grapes was so large that two men had to carry it on a pole between them. So you can imagine that must have been an enormous cluster of grapes. And of course, all that, and they said it was true that this land was indeed flowing with milk and honey, just the way the Lord had told them it would be. But then they also brought some bad news. They said that the people living in this land were very ferocious warriors. There were great cities with great and tall walls. And even more than that, there were giants in the land, they said. So the spies, except for Joshua and Caleb, they wanted the Israelites to go into the land anyway. But the rest of the spies said that there was just no way they could ever go into the land and conquer it. And so it was, as we are told later, that although the Lord had told Moses and the Israelites that they were to go into the land and conquer it, that they said no. They were so afraid of the giants that they just would not do it. And so it was that the Israelites were punished by being sent out into the wilderness for 40 years. And the reason was for that was not that they were afraid of the giants, but rather that they let this fear lead them to disobey the Lord, to distrust that he would help them. Now, should the Israelites have trusted that the Lord would help them win the land? Well, they had already seen the great power of the Lord, how he led them out of Egypt, of the bondage in Egypt, how he then parted the Red Sea for them and destroyed Pharaoh's army. And also they should have trusted the Lord because the spies brought the word back. Yes, everything the Lord had said about this land was indeed true. It was a land flowing with milk and honey. So there's no doubt at all, if the Israelites, although they were afraid, had trusted the Lord and gone into the promised land, then they certainly would have conquered it. But the problem was that instead of thinking about all the wonders the Lord had performed and all the beauty of the land, all they saw were the high walls and the fierce warriors and the scary giants. And that is what caused them to say, no, we don't dare go into the promised land. And that is something we need to think about and remember too. Because sometimes we may run into giants like that. Because we too are on our way to the promised land. That is the promised land of the Lord's heavenly kingdom. And sometimes on our way there, we may indeed run into giants. One such giant may be, you know, say that sometimes you make mistakes. Sometimes we do something wrong. And we may be afraid of getting into trouble because of that. Now, we know that if we have done something wrong, if we have made a mistake, we should admit it. We should tell the truth. But then sometimes as we think about that, we also think about the fact that what are people going to say? What are people going to do when they find out that I made that mistake, that I did this thing wrong? Are they going to point fingers at me? Are they going to begin to distrust me and not like me anymore? And this fear can become a great giant in our minds, to the point where we decide, no, I just don't dare tell the truth about this. Instead, I'll tell a lie, or I'll blame it on somebody else. That is how we can be led astray and scared by the giants that the evil spirits build up in our minds. Or it could be that we have friends who want us to do something wrong. And we know it's wrong and don't want to do it. But then we become afraid, what are they going to do or say if I say, no, this is wrong, so I won't do it? Are they going to laugh at me? Or even worse, are they going to get mad at me? Are they going to turn away from me, not want anything to do with me anymore? And so because of this fear, sometimes we are led into doing things we shouldn't do just out of fear of what others might say or do. So what we need to remember is that even though sometimes we face these giants in our lives, we should remember that just as if the Israelites had trusted in the Lord and entered into the promised land right away, so it is also if we trust in the Lord, if we follow his truth and what he teaches, then no matter how scary it may seem at the time, nevertheless, everything will end well. Because whenever we follow the Lord and obey his truth, we will always enter into a better state. But when the spies brought their report to Moses and the Israelites, they finished their report by saying that we saw the giants and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. That reminds us of our lesson today from the Apocalypse Revealed, where it spoke about locusts, or what is the same, grasshoppers, as being to think from and believe only in what the senses can tell us. They represent a sensuous state that is ruled by fallacious appearances, these things which together constitute worldly wisdom. In other words, this story reminds us that thought from appearances indeed lead to a lack of trust in the Lord, to keep us from that state of happiness and peace and fulfillment, which is the promised land to which the Lord is constantly leading us. As an example of this, we can think about the attitude that this world is the only reality, that you only go around once, and so you have to make the best of it, you have to look out for yourself above all. Or the idea that our success or failures as human beings really consists in our external accomplishments and possessions, of our power and influence and social standing, and our looks and personal appearance, our charm and our popularity. And in that state of mind, the worldly desires and ambitions are turned into giants of almost infinite importance. And all the imperfections, the disappointments, the failures which we inevitably meet during our life in this world, all these things are then disproportionately enlarged, leading to a state of discontent, of self-pity, of frustration and insecurity and fear. Simply because in that state we depend entirely on external circumstances for our peace and happiness. It is, as is also taught in the Arcana Celestia, where it says that he who lives in good and believes that the Lord governs the universe and that all the good which is of love and charity and all the truth which is of faith are from the Lord alone, nay, that life is from him, and thus that from him we live, move, and have our being, is in such a state that he can be gifted with heavenly freedom and together with it with peace, for he then trusts solely in the Lord. But he who believes that he governs himself is continually disquieted, being borne along into cupidities and into solicitude respecting future things, and thus into manifold anxieties. And so it is in that state, the state of the sensual man, divine revelation is regarded by him as something that is inadequate, misleading, or is a folly, or as also taught here in the Arcana Celestia about such a man. And he would again mark, if told that in heaven they are the greatest who are the least, and that they are the wisest who believe and perceive themselves to be the least wise, that they are the happiest who desire others to be most happy. And even those of us who are not prone to mock and reject that way, nevertheless come into states sometimes where we may say that our sense of expediency tends to overcome our commitment to the word. Where too often as individuals, as parents, and in the affairs of the church, we attempted to turn to the shallow pond of worldly wisdom and away from the living fountain of spiritual truth. Simply because in the sight of our prudence, divine revelation seems to be too simplistic or unspecific, too idealistic, or too elevated, too spiritual to help us down here in what we may call the world where the rubber meets the road. And so it is that whenever we resolve to follow the word alone, to follow the Lord in our life, in our views, and in our decisions, there may very well be voices around us and within us whispering, do you really know where you're going? Do you really know what you're doing? Don't be too narrow-minded. There are many different ways to explore. Even calling to us that you're going down a blind alley, you're simply wasting your time and your life. And so it is that we need to ignore these voices. We must not scare as the Israelites were scared. We must remember that it is an eternal and incontrovertible fact that if we seek our answers in the Word, if we let the Lord in His Word guide our thoughts and acts, if we let the heavenly doctrine form, enlighten, and elevate our minds, then we simply cannot lose. It is as the Lord also teaches, if ye abide in my word, ye are my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Amen.